ExchangeWire's ATS Singapore conference returns on July the 2nd, featuring the latest insights from an exceptional group of speakers highlighting future challenges and breakthroughs in media, marketing, and commerce. Visit exchangewire.com/events to get your ticket now. And for an exclusive 10% discount, use the code PODCAST10 at the checkout.
Welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast from ExchangeWire, bringing you the latest news and views from the world of ad tech, media, and marketing.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Mad Tech Podcast. I'm Amy, editor at ExchangeWire, and your host for this episode. I'd like to welcome our guest for today, Raj Parekh, who's head digital sales at MediaCorp. Welcome to the pod, Raj. Thanks for joining us. How are you doing?
Thanks, Amy. Very happy to be here. I'm doing well. How about you?
Good. I'm good too. Thanks. We're having some amazing weather, so I'm loving that. And also welcoming our head of content, John, who just got back from Cannes. How's the week been, John?
Oh, it's been everything, Amy. It's been exhausting. It's been fun. It's been productive. It's been exciting. It's been tiring to the core. It's been warm. But it was fantastic. I'll say a couple of things about it. It's like, it was amazing to have so many good conversations over there about the state of the industry, to see where we're at with a lot of different things. And also a great thanks to anyone who came to the ExchangeWire and FPC drinks at Mar Nolan's on the Tuesday. It was a fantastic event. I had such a good time. I think everyone there did. So I've flown in on a 4-hour delayed flight yesterday, and I'm feeling rather exhausted this morning, but full of the joys of the ad industry.
Well, finally good to have you back, John.
Thank you very much.
So today our stories will look at the evolution of search, Perplexity AI's publishers program, and the TV streaming scene. So our first story for today is from eMarketer, looking at the evolving search landscape. As Google search evolves and consumers turn to other platforms, the SEO playbook defined by link building and keyword optimization is losing relevance. Indications suggest that legacy SEO tactics, such as link building and keyword stuffing, will likely diminish in effectiveness as Google prioritizes content which demonstrates topical authority, expertise, and value to the end user. So the article states that marketers must win over large language models with conversational language, focus on the full marketing funnel, and diversify their search platform spend. Raj, do you agree with what the article suggests?
Yes, Amy. Actually, I do agree with what the article suggests. I believe the evolution of search, especially now, driven by AI integration in search, and even consumer behavior shifting really to AI, is fundamentally changing how advertisers and brands approach engagement on that front. So traditional SEO tactics no longer guarantee impact. Google's emphasis on topical authority as well as real world expertise, as per the article, it suggests that user-centric value has really raised the bar for content authority. And I think that is where it gets very, very interesting for publishers and news owners and media owners. So I feel like AI-generated summaries, which they've started in a few markets, especially like Google's AI overviews, will potentially be the new search. So we will eventually see a sort of a paradigm shift as we continue on this front.
Yeah. And on that note, how is the evolution of search affecting publishers at the moment, Raj?
So I would say, you know, we are in a space now where publishers are no longer only facing challenges. We have moved to facing challenges, but there are also opportunities in this space. So on one hand, AI generated summaries for any regular search that a consumer does, it doesn't necessarily click through to publisher websites. So that's where, you know, we limit our traffic, and we have seen a reduction in traffic overall in the last 18 to 24 months. But as search engines begin to answer user queries directly with these AI overviews, that's where the opportunity lies for publishers to make content beyond the SEO framework. So I think we will move into an evolution where publishers start rethinking the content strategy. It will be very, very important to continue investing in high quality as well as in-depth and original content, focusing on experience and expertise. So we will see a lot more of this surface in AI-driven search interfaces.
Yeah, it's definitely time to do some rethinking for the content strategies there. John, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's not a surprise that the reports, you know, thinking that SEO is going to diminish in effectiveness. I think that's an understatement, actually. It is running out of usefulness quite quickly. The traditional tactics that we used for driving SEO, AI is rewriting the playbook. And we're currently, it's the old cliche of rebuilding the plane while it's in flight. We're still working out how to deal with the rise of the AI models and how they're really going to, you know, how to interact with them better. I know we're going to touch on that a little bit in the next story as well, in terms of how publishers deal with the large language titans. But I think it's obviously like the new playbook is needed here. It needs to be written for publishers to future-proof themselves as much as anything. It's taken us all, not by surprise, but it's come along very, very quickly, and people are accessing information in new ways, different ways. The homepage as we know it needs a complete and utter rethink, and with it comes all the SEO, you know, all the word stuffing, all the lists that we used to have. It's changing as we go, and it's up to us to really discover the next level of how to work alongside it.
Yeah, everything has changed really rapidly. And back to you, Raj. A few years into the future, do you think there'll still be any place for search which is not enhanced by AI?
That's an interesting question. I feel we've already moved to a space where search has been lucky to be enhanced by AI, but we are still in very nascent stages. I would say that it is unlikely a few years into the future that it won't be, it'll remain untouched. But I feel like we'll also move to a place where currently our industry has been struggling with privacy first or you know, transparency or full control over content sources. So there will be potentially a future where there could be an AI-based search engine, but which would be privacy compliant in some ways, or potentially even give back to publishers in some ways, where all of the queries will be link clicks out to publisher content or to the original credible source. So I think it won't really be untouched, but at the same time, their privacy will play a very important part in the future of this.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. John, do you have any thoughts about that? What the future could be like if there's a place for a search that isn't enhanced by AI?
I'll probably go one step further than Raj. I don't think there's anything that's not going to be enhanced by AI in a few years' time. I think like the whole industry is going to, every aspect of our industry will be enhanced by the rise of AI. But I totally agree with Raj that there's the privacy side of it, the copyright side of it, and how AI secures its place is what's up for debate, rather than the fact that it is going to take its place across the industry. But there's certainly going to be place for those that have the more privacy compliant side of it, and just careful use of data and careful use of other people's intellectual property is going to be interesting. And how we safeguard that, for me, is always the real question around AI. But no, I think, yeah, I don't think there's any aspect of our industry that won't be touched by AI in the next 2 years.
Yeah, it's been changing absolutely everything at the moment. And now for our next story, staying on the same topic here. So this story looks at Perplexity's Publishers Program, an article from Forbes. Through its Publishers Program, Perplexity joined the ranks of AI companies paying news outlets and other publishing parties for the use of their content in feeding LLMs. Perplexity said that the program is designed to promote collective success and to equip publishers with new technology to engage their audiences. Publishers sign up to the program include Time, Fortune, WordPress, among many others, reportedly over 100. A spokesperson said that because of AI, they're able to find the most accurate, relevant information for the user and attribute that revenue according to that query and to the publishers cited. Raj, what do you make of Perplexity's Publishers Program?
It's music to my ears, to be honest. as a publisher, I think that it is about time that an AI engine, and Perplexity is a great name actually out there after ChatGPT. It's one of the bigger ones that has taken the step to really do this, and not only just do this, but even command it within their ecosystem. In the article itself, I think the CEO of Perplexity talks about how they want to put publishers first in all of the sources that they give the end consumer in their searches. But at the same time, they are putting money behind this in the publishers program. So I feel like if an AI search engine like Perplexity really looks at this in the longer term, publishers will also be a little less afraid to provide their content to engines like Perplexity. One of the things that they've done recently, a couple of weeks back, when I was speaking to someone back in office on the tech side, he said that there is this thing called as a crawler within the site, within the wireframe of the site. So certain publishers essentially block that crawler. So none of their results are then displayed on any of the AI searches. Whereas a lot of publishers are even unaware, and then their content is taken, it's published on the AI site without the accurate tagging or the link clickbacks. But I think once publishers are aware of this, and you know, Perplexity comes into the fall and says that we are with you, we want to work with you, that looks like a happy future to me.
Yeah. Do you think there are any negatives here, though? Do you think it could be slightly too good to be true the way they're selling it?
I think, you know, like with any kind of ad tech or ad advancement, we will really need to see what this program looks like. How does it pay back publishers? How does it even rank publishers? What kind of content are they really looking for? Are we moving into a SEO 3.0, 4.0? Or are we really looking into the future and saying that we will rank publishers who are credible? We will rank publishers who continuously deliver high quality content, trusted content that people care about and spend time on. And it has to be sharing both ways. I'd say that Perplexity needs to share a lot of the data with publishers in terms of what the users are searching for and reading. And at the same time, publishers need to very accurately measure the kind of traffic sources that come in from AI bots like Perplexity, and look at what kind of value that brings to their traffic.
Yeah, definitely. There needs to be a lot of transparency there. John, what are your thoughts?
I've been really happy to hear Raj's response there, that he has some positives and is, you know, taking positives here. I'll take a more cynical view slightly, that I remember the time where all the publishers needed to get on board with instant articles with Facebook and advanced mobile pages through Google and Apple News, because those platforms were eating traffic and it seemed like a way to be involved with them and have our content read on other people's platforms. And the off-platforming play is really, really interesting, but it did just help publishers be eaten alive by the social platforms. And I am pleased to see publishers be remunerated for their work by the AI platforms. I think that's essential. And I think the partnerships that we've seen and the licensing deals that we've seen are a way of publishers guaranteeing some revenue from the AI platforms, rather than just being bypassed completely and having their information used. I'm wary of it for publishers, of becoming intertwined and losing the direct traffic that they thrive on, and losing the quality and having it all diluted with their information just being passed into one data source that's muddled up with different sources of information. I think publishers have to look after themselves with brands. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Raj, because, you know, we've talked before a lot about quality content and quality sponsored content, and it's, you know, it's important to both of us. And I do worry, and people like The Guardian, like The Times, like The Telegraph, like The Mail, they have their brands, they have their audiences, and they need to look after those. And it's interesting how, you know, the AI platforms chew up and spit out information. But I am positive on the one hand regarding the money and there being some some cooperation between AI and the major publishers, but publishers should be wary of building their house on sand in this case. I think I've used that phrase a few times regarding the deals with AI, but yeah, don't sell the family silver for the sake of a quick buck and a hope of getting involved at the start. Just be very, very careful, I would recommend to publishers. But no, it's good to see that there's some proactive cooperation between the two, I suppose.
Yeah. What do you think, Raj? Is there anything you want to add?
I like the phrase, don't sell the family silver for a quick buck. that's a nice way to put it. I do feel like, you know, we're moving into a space where we have, you know, as a publisher, for us, the most important thing is really looking at the different traffic sources and where we can get new readers and loyal readers from, right? Sticky readers. So currently, social is a huge way of driving traffic as well as amplifying a lot of our content. SEO is another massive way. So those are the two really big ones that matter to us. And with what Perplexity is doing, and hopefully a lot of the others will follow, there will be that third way, which is really through the AI searches. So I would say that it is a bit of a wait and watch. We want to see what kind of paying up or money making models that they offer publishers. We want to see what kind of transparency it is. How does it really impact our users, as well as how can we really build a loyal customer base? Because for us, you know, we consider ourselves firstly and foremostly a news network. Most of our traffic really comes from news. And with news, these days, we know that there is news avoidance. People don't want to look at the news just because there's just not any good news that's going around. And if consumers are spending a little bit more time thanks to AI, then it's a win-win. But if we do see things like high bounce rates and people just coming in for one or two link clicks and not really staying on the side, then there's not really much in it for publishers, even if there are, you know, better paying models from the AI bots.
Yeah, those are some interesting points.
I think that's I think I didn't pick up on something you'd said in your previous answer, Raj, that I'm really interested in, which is the data sharing aspect of it. I think that's actually, I sort of skipped over that in my broad strokes, but I think that if publishers were to be able to get that data back from the platforms regarding what the queries look like and what the prompts look like, that is leading the audience to questions that, say, Media Corp are answering through their articles. That's interesting. That's like, that allows you to build, and that allows you to see, you know, that's where the new SEO lies in terms of knowing how to optimize for it. So I think that is very interesting, and that is positive.
Yeah. And I believe that if that happens, then it's then we live in more of a perfect world. But if a Perplexity then goes back and just makes it into their version of an SEO where they want to charge more money and then keep it like the walled gardens and not really tell us things, then that's where the trouble will begin or continue, you know? So you're, yeah, on one hand, you're saying we want to do a publisher's program, but on the other hand, we have absolutely no visibility. We're going in blind. So yeah, it's a bit of a give and take there.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, that's definitely an interesting point there before on the data. It's definitely a lot that publishers could be using to their advantage to, you know, refine their strategies and change how they're working, definitely. So let's move on to our last story for today, which looks at the streaming competition between traditional broadcasters in the UK and the streaming giants. So research indicates that households watching ad-supported content consume up to 40% less, providing traditional broadcasters with an opportunity to retain market share. Netflix's ad-supported tier now accounts for a third of its 300 million global subscribers, but its initial rollout faced some criticism in the UK. Disney and Amazon have also introduced ad models. While these US-based platforms have reignited growth and improved advertiser interest, concerns remain about limited viewer engagement and high costs. UK broadcasters are leveraging these challenges to claim an edge, but industry experts warn that the advantage may be short-lived as streaming giants refine their advertising strategies. Raj, what do you make of the current battle between traditional broadcasters and the streaming giants? Which do you think are poised to be most successful within the next few years?
Well, this battle has been ongoing for a few years, but it just keeps getting interesting, especially in the different markets all around different regions of the world. Well, I would say that the battle marks, you know, in the true sense of a battle, it marks a new frontier between traditional broadcasters as well as the streaming giants. I think what everyone's after is viewer attention as well as advertiser spend, you know, on both ends of the stick. The interesting thing that the story also says is that Netflix now has about a third of their 300 million global subscriber base who are now watching ads. So that means 100 million of them are ad supported tiers, which tells me that users are willing to spend a bit of money, spend a little less money, and be served with ads. And we've all been, consumers of YouTube from probably two decades now. So we don't mind a little bit of that. I think it'll get interesting where we are probably at the cusp of broadcasters making more sense of their content, because broadcasters really have the local nuances. They understand local flavors, the local content, the cultural resonance in that sense. And that's very important for markets like Singapore as well as the rest of Asia. And they are making the most because they are, they make sure that all of their platforms, whether it's OTT, whether it's even through devices like CTV, are being able to serve more precision targeting. So because it's local content, they can do things like genre targeting, moment-based advertising. They can do specific episode-based advertising as well as integration. And I feel like that's where streamers are currently playing catch-up. You know, they're still in the space of getting their programmatic, their ad stack sorted. And that's where local broadcasters are making a lot more money right now, especially in this part of the region. But I think in the long term, streamers will win this this battle or this long term war, and they will make sure that they get more advertiser budgets. How does that happen? Whether it's content sharing, whether streamers will also get access to a lot of local content, we'd only have to wait and see. But at the moment, I would say it's about a 50-50 at this point.
Mm. Yeah, John, do you agree with that? Do you agree that the streaming giants will win in the long run?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's, you know, it's the way the wind's blowing. And it's at the moment, there is room for everything. I mean, the streamers will eventually adapt themselves. And that's the way that, yeah, it's how it's going to go in the future. We are heading towards a streaming world. Some of the news from Cannes that absolutely fascinated me was Netflix's deal with TF1 in France, where they will be now for the first time hosting a linear channel on their platform. So that's a big step for a streamer back into the linear world and hosting on their own platform. It's it shows that they've recognized that perhaps linear still has its place, and that people, you know, like we're seeing here in this story, that it's as much as Netflix have 100 million people on their ad-supported tier, people are traditionally like to consume linear, and they are consuming less than they used to on streamers. So it is those kind of deals that I think will define the future. And TVs, you know, it is not just linear is dying, linear is dead. It has its place, but it'll just take a new format. It's going to be the platforms that win out. So it's a really interesting story. And the headlines, it's always great to hear when UK broadcasters have a victory. But it's a matter of time. But the models are changing. I mean, Netflix came in very gung-ho and years ago said, never going to have ads. We won't ever have ads. And then, a few years tick by and now the ad-supported network. And Raj, as you said, people are happy to pay a little bit less money each month and have ads. I certainly am. I'm at the moment very tempted to notch all my streaming services down to ad-supported, first of all, because I work in the industry and I'm quite interested in what they do with the ads, but first of all, because it saves a few quid each month. And the other thing you mentioned, Raj, in terms of it's about capturing attention. It's about, you know, we're in the attention economy. And I know that's something that we're going to have you on stage at ATS Singapore talking about in a couple of weeks, which I'm really looking forward to. But
yeah, streamers will find a way to get people's attention. They're big enough businesses and innovative enough to work out a long-term play. But that doesn't necessarily preclude linear like the TF1 deal. So it's, I mean, I love CTV and the whole landscape of it. It's absolutely fascinating to me, and the attention around it. So yeah, looking forward to hearing what's next for Netflix, actually.
Yeah, that was a big deal announced by Netflix this week. It was interesting to see. So John, do you believe then that consumers have really warmed to the idea of seeing ads more as more ad tiers have been introduced?
Yeah, I think so. Things move and things adapt, and it seemed, natural at the start with Netflix that it wasn't, you were paid for, so it wasn't going to be an ad supported experience. But as I said, it's evolved into that. And the same as people got used to seeing two unskippable videos at the start of their YouTube content, people are bombarded by advertising on a daily basis. And I think it just becomes par for the course very, very quickly. And I'm still glad there's opt-in and opt-out. So if people do want to pay the extra to not have it, then that's absolutely fine. But yeah, it's the same point I made before. Just I am one of those people who is considering, yeah, the cost-cutting exercise on taking on a few more ads. And it is of no bother to me. And I don't think people are, yeah, massively against that. I think they're certainly more used to seeing it on their streaming services now.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like you said, I think it's definitely good for them to still keep those two options so that people who want to see the ads can, and people who would rather spend a bit more don't actually have to see them.
Yeah, but I think people understand. Sorry, I'm going on here. So, I think there's also maybe a greater understanding of the value proposition of the ads. You know, people are understanding that the ads pay for the streamers to make quality content. I think that's, it's perhaps not the first thing that comes to people's mind when they're seeing an ad in the middle of their Netflix show, but it's certainly true that this is help, as Netflix found out, ads do prop up the industry. And I think people know that for the sake of being able to watch, a wonderful show like Adolescence that was very high quality this year, Department Q is doing really well on Netflix now. Like if you get, as long as they don't overdo the ad load, I suppose, as long as it's thoughtfully done and carefully put together and maybe innovates, I want to see new formats. I've spoken about that at Cannes this week. I'd really like to see streamers not just run pre-roll, mid-roll and post ads. I'd like to see them really do something a little bit more interesting with it. But I think it's understood that for these shows to continue and be available for you, then, if you have the option to have ads or not, then they are helping make your programs exist.
Yeah, I think that's also the problem though, right? It's like a slippery slope. They say, at the start, like you mentioned before, they're saying, oh, we're not going to have any ads. And then, they change their mind, introduce ad model. And then, what could happen in the next, 5 years' time? How many ads are people going to be seeing in the future?
Yeah, this is when we slip into total dystopia where you get 45 minutes of adverts for 10 minutes of programming. But then hopefully we won't see that happening.
Yeah, Raj, do you have any thoughts there?
I 100% agree, because I feel like we've all been so used to watching ads on YouTube for all of these years, so it's not a new thing for us. Of course, we've been spoiled by Netflix and Disney and Prime over the years, but it's now come to a point where I feel in a real world scenario, like a lot of us, we don't have just one streaming service. We have multiple streaming services, and costs add up. Even as a user, as an end consumer, costs really add up at the end of the month. So if I can tone down and move into ad based tiers for, especially for streaming services that I don't spend too much time on, then it really doesn't affect my viewing experience. I would add a bit of cultural nuance to this as well, because we had done a study last year around connected TV consumption in Singapore, and we saw that we did a small study with actual consumers of our content, and 70% said that they don't mind ads as long as it is a seamless experience for their content. And when they know when to expect the ads in the content. So that was a great learning for us. We do know that in cities like Singapore, you know, the cost of living is also rising. So consumers are a bit price conscious. So they will tone down some of their tiers into ad-based tiers. So we need to understand those based on demographics. And, you know, also as someone who manages an OTT platform, we do want our content to go around a much wider audience base. So there could be audiences or premium audiences who don't mind paying a little bit more for ad-free content. But if we can lower our subscription models and reach out to a much wider majority of consumers, then that helps us gain a lot of traction as well. And we always want to be up in the game versus the Netflixes of the world.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's some interesting research there. Yeah, I think that's a good note to end us on then. Thank you so much for joining us, Raj.
So much, Amy. Thanks so much, John. It was a pleasure speaking to you both.
Thanks. Yeah, us too. It was great to have your insights. And thank you, as always, John, for joining.
No, thank you for having me in my slightly hazy post-can light this morning. But no, always a pleasure to have you, Raj. Thank you so much, as always. And cheers, Amy. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, man. Thanks to all our listeners. That was today's Mad Tech Podcast. We'll see you in the next episode.
You've been listening to the Mad Tech Podcast, brought to you by ExchangeWire.